Brussels is on its fourth day of a high-alert lockdown as authorities search for suspects in the aftermath of the Paris attacks. But how did Belgium become a breeding ground for Islamic extremists? Ryan Heath is senior EU correspondent and associate editor for Politico, and he joins us from Brussels. Ryan, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
So you and Politico EU have been writing a lot of articles, both narrowly about the terrorists themselves in Molenbeek, and also about Belgium as the soft underbelly of Europe's counterterrorism efforts. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we mean is that Belgium is a small state, so it's always going to struggle with the sort of challenges that it's now facing. But it's also at the crossroads of Europe, so it's a very convenient place for people who want to undertake activities in big countries around it, such as the UK, France, and Germany. And also, it's a highly fragmented state. So there is a lot of devolved decision-making, which means that the local police force often has more power and more resources than the national intelligence agencies, for example. And it's also a very divided country. It's segmented heavily into language groups, into three different regions, and Molenbeek itself has been heavily ghettoized for around about 20 years. So it's kind of a toxic combination of ingredients that reveals all of these fundamental tensions in how Belgium is organized as we're facing the fourth day of lockdown, where it's the new normal to find armored vehicles on the streets and to see hundreds of people with semi-automatic weapons as you go to and from your daily business.
Well, it's shocking, of course, because Belgium, Brussels, is the capital not only of where NATO does its work, but also the European Union, the European Commission. It's kind of stunning to think that this place where so much European political business gets done is now in its fourth day of lockdown. I'm struck by reading that Brussels has 19 different communes, or what we would call maybe boroughs, which range in population from 20,000 to 150,000. And then at one time, until recently, each commune had its own police force, and there are still six police forces in the capital city. Does that make it incredibly hard to do policing and security at a time like this when you've got this lockdown going? Or are national authorities in charge? Who is in charge?
Until Saturday, nobody was in charge effectively, and that's been the disease that's been spreading throughout Belgium for a long time. The only way we got from 19 down to six police departments was a series of absolutely horrendous child molestation and abduction and murder cases in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And it took street protests of hundreds of thousands of people for that sort of reform to take place. Yet you still have a situation where the police will routinely literally stop at the border, stop at the tracks, stop at the canal, and not share the information or pursue the criminal across that border. We have not very highly trained local police forces who literally allowed four terror plots to take place under their nose. In the case of Molenbeek, one of the drug-running cafes that helped enable the Paris attacks, we understand, was literally about 200 yards from that district's police headquarters, as was the family that is accused of being caught up, the two brothers in this situation. So it's an incredibly difficult sort of situation to dial back from, because you've got these not highly trained local forces that have all of the manpower. You have 10 separate national or regional security organizations who all struggle to communicate with each other. And when it comes to really getting together and saying, okay, we will really lock down Molenbeek, we will block off every exit and entrance as the authorities in Boston did after the Marathon bombing, mm-hmm. and we're going to search house to house, they don't have the legal powers to enforce it, and they don't have the coordination practice essentially in place to actually make that happen. And that's what generates a series of major political questions, major practical fears amongst everybody else living in Brussels, and people starting to wonder, well, why are we turning the metro back on when we haven't found any of these people? Why mm-hmm. should we trust you when you say things can go back to normal?
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's talk more about this particular neighborhood that you're mentioning, Molenbeek. It's known for its recruitment of radical jihadis. There have been a number of police raids there in the past week and a half since the Paris attacks. But also, there have been other plots that have come out of Molenbeek. Tell us more about it, and how did it become a hotbed of Islamic radicalism?
Molenbeek was first industrialized in the 19th century. So at one time, it was very advanced compared to the rest of the continent of Europe. And it attracted a lot of those cutting-edge technologies, factories, industries. But it lost a lot of its middle-class and medium-skilled jobs over the last 20 to 30 years. It's become a de-industrialized place. And in replacement for those industries and those populations, the mayor of Molenbeek really courted large blocks of immigrants to repopulate the district. The Belgian state developed a strong relationship with the Saudi government. It imported a lot of low-wage Saudi workers. It imported clerics from Saudi Arabia who were teaching very strict, very purist teachings, or at least one particular interpretation of Islam, the Salafist or the Wahhabism interpretation of Islam. And so instead of actually integrating those populations, in finding them the skills, in placing them in the jobs, and in integrating them into the communities, I think that community was essentially used by a lot of the local leaders who did backroom deals to arrange those voting blocks, mm-hmm. To look the other way. And over the course of 20 years or so, you saw a huge explosion in the population of Molenbeek. You saw it become a sort of no-go zone as well, as people failed to be offered the Dutch language that they needed, as other Belgians failed to react in a truly open way to them. And that community became more and more closed off. It remained very poor. And the local authorities simply didn't do the looking and the checking and raise the flags that these problems were really building up. But we have had, over the last 10 years, a number of experts in security, a number of experts in Islam, a number of concerned locals raising red flags. Mm-hmm. But they weren't being listened to at that higher regional and national level.
And so what were some of the plots that we know came out of Molenbeek, aside from the Paris attacks?
So the first really difficult one was the attack on the Brussels Jewish Museum last year, where several people were murdered. There was another foiled terror plot where we still don't know exactly what was intended, but where two of the intended attackers were killed by police in a town outside of Belgium. You had the Thalys train attack, where those American Marines stepped in to save people on that fast train just a couple of months back. And then you also have the Charlie Hebdo attack, where the arms were bought in Molenbeek, even though it doesn't seem that all the organizing happened in Molenbeek. Mm-hmm. You've got a drugs and an arms haven because Europe has a border-free internal zone. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to move these arms and drugs in and out. And you've got authorities who are essentially either not receiving the intelligence from the big countries around them because they don't trust the Belgian authorities, or who are looking the other way because they're under-resourced or not paying attention.
Well, you know, you have already told us about some of these linguistic divisions within Belgium between the French speakers and the Flemish speakers and also the small number of German speakers. It seems as if instead of becoming more centralized, from what I've read, Belgium is actually going in the other direction, more towards sort of localized politics and regionalized. And so if that is the movement politically, how do you centralize the collection of intelligence and security services?
That's the real challenge. It's going to take a major shock like what we're going through right now. And hopefully it will not take an actual attack on Belgian soil for that change to happen. The Le Monde newspaper, the paper of record in France, today editorialized that Belgium was a nation without a state. And I think that's quite an accurate statement. And we, Politico, have run stories saying Belgium shows a lot of the signs of being a failed state, where there are highly organized community systems in Belgium. But those systems are really not capable of dealing with cross-border problems. And that's what we're seeing in this set of events right now. The Belgian state has really been put on the back foot. And that's why you have so many questions swirling around the Belgian political system at the moment about when will this government, when will authorities in Belgium adopt a new form of accountability? I mean, it's a serious question when you have five terror plots in one district, and yet the local police chief, no one's asked him to resign. He hasn't thought about resigning. He hasn't offered an apology. And I'm not saying that those are the solutions to this current problem, but it's a telling sign that there is an inability to sort of face hard facts in Belgium.
Ryan Heath is senior EU correspondent and associate editor for Politico Europe. Ryan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
A pleasure.